This is a dangerous world we're living in here. And America cannot afford a Secretary of Defense who is unprepared for that mission.
Well, I've got bad news for America.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
Why?
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets on the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell-ish fellow from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. A bit later this hour, we will have a few updates on the LA fires out here that continue as firefighters in recent days have been able to gain some measure of containment against two of the largest fires that are still raging in Pacific Palisades and Altadena. That, however, as the National Weather Service issues another ominous warning about the return of very gusty and dangerous conditions predicted to return overnight on Tuesday and into Wednesday, particularly near the still raging Palisades fires. But with the second inauguration of convicted felon Donald Trump now less than 1 week away, the U.S. Senate confirmation hearings for his top cabinet posts are only now beginning to get underway, with a number of bumps along the way. Two of his nominees for top posts have already withdrawn from the process, including the first attorney general nominee, now former Congressman Matt Gaetz, who at the time of his nomination was already being investigated by the House Ethics Committee on charges that include sex trafficking of minors and the abuse of illicit drugs. This week, Senate confirmation hearings had been scheduled for Trump nominees Doug Burgum, the billionaire former governor of North Dakota, to be Secretary of the Interior, and former congressman and military chaplain Doug Collins to head up the Department of Veterans Affairs. In both cases, however, Republicans conceded that paperwork, including FBI background checks, had not yet been sufficiently completed by the Trump transition team in order to begin the scheduled hearings there today.
Oh, that bodes well.
Oh, it does, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Desi Doyen.
Hi.
There are, meanwhile, eight cabinet picks whose hearings have yet to be scheduled at all, including some of the most contentious ones, like Robert F. Kennedy Jr. to head the Department of Health and Human Services, Trump loyalists Kash Patel to become the new director of the FBI, and Congresswoman Elise Stefanik as his U.S. ambassador. In the meantime, Republicans have currently scheduled, at least for now, seven nomination hearings, virtually all at the same time on Wednesday, for Trump's often controversial nominees for the Secretary of Homeland Security, Attorney General, Secretary of Transportation, CIA Director, Secretary of State, Secretary of Energy, and the director of the Office of Management and Budget.
And considering that many senators have multiple committee assignments, it means that there will not be a very coordinated ability for them to be able to get the answers that they require for this advice and consent that they're required to do in the Constitution.
Not to mention that it will make it next to impossible for the public to be able to follow along in any sort of substantive way, which
that too.
Seems to me is sort of the very point of that type of scheduling. Yeah, you're not supposed to hear what goes on. Nonetheless, on Tuesday, the Senate Armed Services Committee hearing for Fox News weekend host and former National Guardsman Pete Hegseth to head up the 3 million strong Defense Department and its $850 billion annual budget as its new secretary under Donald Trump. Well, those hearings got underway, and while briefer than previous SecDef confirmation hearings, when Senate committee members in the past were allowed two or even three rounds of questioning each for such an important post, Republicans here on Tuesday allowed just one single round of questioning. 7 minutes for each senator on the committee. That when questioning Hegseth, who had been credibly accused of sexual harassment, including rape, long-term excessive drinking issues, including while on the job, and financial mismanagement of two small veterans nonprofits that he had headed up in previous years. He was also barred from serving as a member of the National Guardsmen who were selected to protect the 2021 inauguration of President Joe Biden, due at the time to allegations of evidence of white supremacy from members of his own National Guard outfit. Hegseth has also repeatedly asserted in no uncertain terms that women should be barred from serving in military combat roles, despite the many who have done so for years now, and the fact that one of them, Senator Tammy Duckworth, had given two of her legs as a combat helicopter pilot shot down over Iraq. But on Tuesday, despite weeks of intensive pressure against Hegseth's nomination to head up the Pentagon, arguably the largest and certainly most lethal organization in the world, his nomination hearing went forward anyway after Hegseth apparently refused to meet directly in person, as per tradition, with any Democratic senator on the Armed Services Committee. Therefore, the total of 7 minutes that each Democratic senator was allowed to ask questions of this nominee, well, that will likely be the only time each of them is allowed direct contact, I guess, with the nominee before they will be required to vote on whether to approve his nomination out of committee. Making all of this more troubling, particularly when dealing with such an important role and sensitive post that is uniquely vulnerable to blackmail by both foreign and domestic interests, Senate Democrats on Monday said that an FBI background check on Hegseth omitted key details on major allegations against him, in part because it did not include interviews with critical witnesses. It sounds, in fact, very much like the phony and or exceedingly limited FBI investigation that was quickly carried out to whitewash multiple credible allegations of sexual assault that was made against then Judge Brett Kavanaugh, one of three of Donald Trump's nominees to become a U.S. Supreme Court justice during his first term, just prior to Kavanaugh's Senate confirmation hearings back in July of 2018. So, yeah, if this sounds familiar, it's an old playbook. According to people familiar with the Bureau's investigation of Hegseth, the Times reported just after midnight on Tuesday that the FBI probe had failed to interview one of Hegseth's two ex-wives before its findings were presented to senators last week. Senator Richard Blumenthal, Democrat of Connecticut and a member of the Armed Services Committee, said in an interview that there are, quote, significant gaps and inadequacies in the FBI report, including the failure to interview some of the key potential witnesses with personal knowledge of improprieties or abuse, unquote. Moreover, as a rank-and-file member of the panel, Blumenthal was not given a briefing on the report or provided with a copy of it, but was informed of its contents by someone who was given access to it. So why were members of the committee not allowed to review the report in full? Well, that's unclear, but rank-and-file Democrats on the committee have been demanding to review that document. They have not been allowed to do so. Quote, quite a few of the women with significant allegations against Hegseth have not been interviewed by the FBI investigators, said Senator Tammy Duckworth of Illinois. She's also another member of this panel. She said on Monday evening that some of those women feared for their safety and that of their children. Hegseth was accused of sexually assaulting a woman in Monterey, California, back in 2017 in an encounter that he has insisted was consensual. Despite a rape kit being requested and administered by a local hospital, which reported the matter to law enforcement, and the matter then being referred to the Monterey County Prosecutor's Office. No charges, however, were brought, though Hegseth later paid that woman an undisclosed amount of money as part of a confidential settlement agreement. Senator Duckworth, a former U.S. Army helicopter pilot who, as mentioned, lost both of her legs after being shot down during a firefight over Iraq in 2004, said that her understanding was that several witnesses were interested in speaking with the investigative team at the FBI, but had not been interviewed by the Bureau's vetting team. Trump's transition team commissioned that FBI background check on Hegseth last month after initially floating the idea of hiring a private contractor to look into the president-elect's cabinet picks. As the client, presidential transition teams, however, are traditionally able to set the parameters for FBI background checks into cabinet picks and potentially dictate which witnesses are interviewed or not and what questions are asked or not. Samantha Hegseth, that would be Mr. Hegseth's second wife, reportedly made multiple attempts to contact the Bureau for a more substantive discussion with them, but her calls were not returned last week, according to those with knowledge of the investigation. The Hegseths, who share custody of three children, they had a contentious divorce. She worked for Hegseth at a small nonprofit that he led while he was married to his first wife, who filed for divorce, citing adultery. In 2017, 7 years after Pete and Samantha Hegseth were married, Pete Hegseth, then an anchor on the TV program Fox and Friends, had a child with his producer at Fox News. Ms. Hegseth then filed for divorce the very next month. In 2018, before their divorce was finalized, Pete Hegseth's own mother, Penelope, sent her son a brutal email condemning what she described as his abusive treatment toward women. She has since defended her son as a changed man who deserves to be confirmed as defense secretary. So with all of that, it is particularly disturbing that senators were limited to just one single round of 7 minutes of questioning each, especially after Hegseth refused to meet with any of the Democratic members of the committee in advance, which is usually customary. Senator Duckworth told Time magazine that Republicans lied when they blamed scheduling conflicts for making Hegseth unavailable to meet with Democrats on the committee. She said there is no scheduling conflict. She says she has the receipts. He was never planning on meeting with the Democrats prior to this, she said, and we've made ourselves more than available. So for whatever they're telling you, it is a fib, she said. During his opening statements, Republican Armed Service Committee Chair Senator Roger Wicker of Mississippi dismissed allegations against Hegseth as coming from, quote, anonymous sources, unquote, even though many of the allegations are not anonymous at all, but have not been publicly released as they involve, for example, an alleged rape victim in a police report where the victim is named. It just hasn't been made public. Meanwhile, in his opening statement, Hegseth failed to address any of the allegations of improper behavior against him, and throughout the hearing, he sidestepped any such questions as, quote, smears from anonymous sources. Given the lack of oversight allowed for such an important nomination by someone uniquely unqualified for the job and the shortened amount of time that each senator was allowed to question the nominee, as you'll see, senators, at least on the Democratic side, seeking actual information from Hegseth were forced to try to jam a whole lot into their few allotted minutes of questioning during the often contentious, combative, and tense hearing. We pick up with questioning from Democratic Senator Mazie Hirono of Hawaii, who focused on Hegseth's fitness to serve.
As secretary, you will be in charge of maintaining good order and discipline by enforcing the Uniform Code of Military Justice, UCMJ. In addition to the sexual assault allegations, I have read multiple reports of your regularly being drunk at work, including by people who worked with you at Fox News. Do you know that being drunk at work is prohibited for service members under the UCMJ?
Senator, those
yes
are
or no?
multiple false anonymous reports peddled by NBC
Do
News
you know that,
that run directly contradictory to the dozens of men and women at Fox News Channel who I work
hearing,
with
I'm
who
not
came
hearing
on
the
record
to my question.
And said they
In your
never
opening statement, Mr. Hegseth, you commit to holding leaders accountable at all levels. That includes you, of course. And frankly, as secretary, you will be on the job 24/7. You recently promised some of my Republican colleagues that you stopped drinking and won't drink if confirmed, correct?
Absolutely.
Will you resign as Secretary of Defense if you drink on the job, which is a 24/7 position?
I've made this commitment on behalf of
Will
the men and women I'm serving.
Will you resign as Secretary of Defense
I've made
if
this
you
commitment
drink
on behalf
on the job.
Of the men and women I'm serving
I'm not
because
hearing,
it's the most important deployment of my life.
I'm not hearing an
life.
Answer to my question, so I'm going to move on. While you have made that commitment, you will not commit to resigning if you drink on the job. As Secretary of Defense, you will swear an oath to the Constitution and not an oath to any man, woman, or president, correct?
Senator, on multiple occasions, including as a young second lieutenant, I have sworn an oath to the Constitution,
Answer is yes.
and I'm proud to do so. Yes, ma'am.
In June of 2020, then-President Trump directed former Secretary of Defense Mark Esper to shoot protesters in the legs in downtown D.C., an order Secretary Esper refused to comply with. Would you carry out such an order from President Trump?
Senator, I was in the Washington, D.C. National Guard unit that was in Lafayette Square during those
Would
events.
Would you carry out an order to shoot protesters in the legs?
I saw 50 Secret Service agents get injured
Secretary
by
Esper.
Rioters trying to jump over the fence, set
Again,
the church on fire, and destroy
you know what?
A statue.
That sounds to me that you will comply with such an order. You will shoot protesters in the leg. Moving on. President-elect has attacked our allies in recent weeks, refusing to rule out using military force to take over Greenland and the Panama Canal, and threatening to make Canada the 51st state. Would you carry out an order from President Trump to seize Greenland, a territory of our NATO ally Denmark, by force, or would you comply with an order to take over the Panama Canal?
Senator, I will emphasize that President Trump received 77 million votes to be the lawful commander-in-chief
of this country.
We're not
talking about the election. My question is, would you use our military to take over Greenland or an ally of Denmark?
Senator, one of the things that President Trump is so good at is never strategically tipping his hand. And so I would never in this public forum give one way or another direct what orders the president would give
me
in any context.
That sounds to me that you would contemplate carrying out such an order to basically invade Greenland and take over the Panama Canal. Current DOD policy allows service members and eligible dependents to be reimbursed for travel associated with non-covered reproductive health care, including abortions. Will you maintain this common sense policy?
Senator, I've always been personally pro-life. I know President Trump has as well, and we will review all policies, but our standard is whatever the president wants on this particular issue.
So,
with my advice, I will take a look at
it. If the president tells you that this common sense
the federal,
policy will
I,
not be maintained, you will not enable our service members to seek reproductive care. So
I don't
like
believe the federal government
I'm not
should
hearing
be
answers to my questions, Mr. Chairman. I just want to note that the other area that of serious concern to me is President Trump saying that he wants to use the military to help with mass deportations, which will cost billions of dollars. And what that will do to readiness is very, very concerning. Mr. Hegseth, I have noticed a disturbing pattern. You previously have made a series of inflammatory statements about women in combat, LGBTQ service members, Muslim Americans, and Democrats. Since your nominations, however, you have walked those back on TV in interviews and most recently in your opening statements. You are no longer on Fox and Friends, Mr. Hegseth. If confirmed, your words, actions, and decisions will have real impacts on national security and our service members' lives. There are close to 3 million personnel in the Department of Defense, $900 billion budget. I hardly think you are prepared to do the job.
Democratic Senator Tim Kaine of Virginia focused on Pete Hegseth's character, the accusations of sexual assault and alcohol abuse and public drunkenness against him as putting the Secretary of Defense nominee at risk of blackmail.
I want to return to the incident that you referenced a minute ago that occurred in Monterey, California in October 2017. At that time, you were still married to your second wife, correct?
I believe so.
And you had just fathered a child by a woman who would later become your third wife, correct?
Senator, I was falsely charged. Fully investigated and completely cleared.
So you think you are completely cleared because you committed no crime? That's your definition of cleared? You had just fathered a child 2 months before by a woman that was not your wife. I am shocked that you would stand here and say you're completely cleared. Can you so casually cheat on a second wife and cheat on the mother of a child that had been born 2 months before, and you tell us you are completely cleared?
Senator,
how is that a complete clear?
Senator, her child's name is Gwendolyn Hope Hegseth, and she's a child of God, and she's 7 years old.
And she was, and you cheated on the mother of that child less than 2 months after that daughter was born, didn't you?
Those were false charges.
Well,
it was fully investigated, and I was completely cleared. And I am so grateful for the marriage I have to this amazing woman behind me.
You've admitted that you had sex at that hotel in October 2017. You said it was consensual, isn't that correct?
Yes.
You've admitted that it was consensual, and you were still married, and you just had a child by another woman.
Again.
How do you explain your
completely
judgment?
Completely false charges against me.
Fully investigated, and
I was completely clear.
You have admitted that you had sex while you were married to wife two after you just had fathered a child by wife three. You've admitted that. Now, if it had been a sexual assault, that would be disqualifying to be Secretary of Defense, wouldn't it?
It was a false claim then and a false claim now.
If it had been a sexual assault, that would be disqualifying to be Secretary of Defense, wouldn't it?
That was a false claim.
So you're
talking about a hypothetical.
So you can't tell me whether someone who has committed a sexual assault is disqualified from being Secretary of Defense?
Senator, I know in my instance, and I'm talking about my instance only, it was a false claim.
But you acknowledge that you cheated on your wife and that you cheated on the woman by whom you had just fathered a child. You have admitted that.
I will allow your words to speak for themselves.
You're not retracting that today. That's good. I assume that in each of your weddings, you've pledged to be faithful to your wife. You've taken an oath to do that, haven't you?
Senator, as I've acknowledged to everyone in this committee, not a perfect person, not claiming to
be. But no, I just asked a simple question. You've taken an oath, like you would take an oath to be Secretary of Defense in all of your weddings, to be faithful to your wife. Is that correct?
I have failed in things in my life, and thankfully I'm redeemed by my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ.
In finalizing divorces from your first and second wives, were there non-disclosure agreements in connection with those divorces?
Senator, not that I'm aware of.
If there were, would you agree to release those first and second wives from any confidentiality agreement?
Senator, it's not something I'm aware of.
But if there were, you would agree to release them from a confidentiality agreement?
Senator, that's not my responsibility.
Did you ever engage in any acts of physical violence against any of your wives?
Senator, absolutely not.
But you would agree with me that if someone had committed physical violence against a spouse, that would be disqualifying to serve as Secretary of Defense, correct?
Senator, Absolutely not have I ever done that.
You would agree that that would be a disqualifying offense, would you not?
Senator, you're talking about a hypothetical.
I don't think it's a hypothetical. Violence against spouses occurs every day. And if you as a leader are not capable of saying that physical violence against a spouse should be a disqualifying fact for being secretary of the most powerful nation in the world, you're demonstrating an astonishing lack of judgment. The incident in Monterey led to a criminal charge, a criminal investigation, a private settlement, and a cash payment to the woman who filed the complaint. And there was also a non-disclosure agreement, correct?
It was a confidential settlement agreement off of a nuisance lawsuit.
Right. During an interview, you claimed that you settled the matter because you were worried that if it became public, it might hurt your career. Do you maintain that you were blackmailed?
Senator, I maintain that false claims were made against me. And ultimately,
your attorney
those false claims,
frame,
I had the opportunity to attest my innocence in those false claims.
But you didn't reveal any of this to President Trump or the transition team as they were considering you to be nominated for Secretary of Defense. You didn't reveal the action. You didn't reveal the criminal complaint. You didn't reveal the criminal investigation. You didn't reveal the settlement. You didn't reveal the cash payment. Why didn't you inform the commander-in-chief and the transition team of this very relevant event?
Senator, I've appreciated every part of the process with the transition team. They have been open and honest with me. We've had great conversations between the two of us. And I appreciate the opportunity that President-elect Trump
has given
me.
But you chose not to reveal this, right? Because you knew it would hurt your chances. So you chose not to reveal this really important thing to the commander-in-chief and the transition team because you were worried about your chances rather than trying to be candid with the future president of the United States. Are there any other important facts that you chose not to reveal to the president-elect and his team as they were considering you to be Secretary of Defense?
Senator, I sit here before you in open book as everyone who's watched this process.
With multiple non-disclosure and confidentiality agreements tying the hands of many people who would like to comment to us. Much has been made of your workplace behavior as a leader of nonprofit veterans organizations and as a Fox News contributor. Were you fired from either of the leadership positions with the nonprofits?
I was the leader. I was the CEO of Concerned Veterans for America,
ones,
and executive director of Vets for Freedom.
Were you fired from either?
And I was never fired from a veterans organization.
Do you have non-disclosure agreements with either of those organizations?
Not that I'm aware of, Senator.
Many of your work colleagues have said that you show up for work under the influence of alcohol or drunk. I know you've denied that, but you would agree with me, right, that if that was the case, that would be disqualifying for somebody to be Secretary of Defense.
Senator, those are all anonymous false claims, and the totality
they're not anonymous.
The letters on the record here,
they're not anonymous.
On the record, people
we've seen records with names attached to
Vets for Freedom, Concerned Vets for America, and Fox News attributing to me being working hard every day on behalf of
One of your
mission.
Colleagues said that you got drunk at an event at a bar and chanted, kill all Muslims. Another colleague, not anonymous, we have this, said that you took co-workers to a strip club. You were drunk. You tried to dance with strippers. You had to be held off the stage. And one of your employees in that event filed a sexual harassment charge as a result of it. Now, I know you deny these things, but isn't that the kind of behavior that, if true, would be disqualifying for somebody to be Secretary of Defense?
Senator, anonymous false charges.
They're not anonymous. And I'll just conclude and say this to the chairman. You claim that this was all anonymous. We have seen records with names attached to all of these, including the name of your own mother. So don't make this into some anonymous press thing. We have seen multiple names of colleagues consistently throughout your career that have talked about your abusive actions,
Chairman,
attitudes,
I think he's over his time. He's way over his time.
I now yield.
Well, that's going well. That was Democratic Senator Tim Kaine of Virginia asking questions to Pete Hegseth. For their part, and despite all of this, Republicans on the committee lined up to support Hegseth, as they spent much of their hearing complaining that the military had become too woke, as they repeatedly derided it under President Biden, and too focused on diversity, equity, and inclusion, or DEI. Yet, as Senator Kaine noted via Blue Sky after the hearing with an accompanying photograph, quote, GOP members complain about reduction of military standards while using a huge chart that misspells the word military as military. It is not, however, as though Republicans didn't ask Hegseth some questions themselves, but, well, they weren't particularly tough ones. For example, here's North Dakota Republican Kevin Cramer in his exchange with Hegseth.
I want to say thank you for your strong proclamation, unapologetic proclamation of faith in Jesus Christ. I sat here and listened to your opening statement and thought, wow, this is a guy who in today's culture is willing to stand up and say the first thing is first, faith in Jesus Christ. And I was reminded of what Christ said in Matthew, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and these things shall be added unto you. You are going to have a great future as our secretary, and I look forward to that day happening.
Tough stuff, huh? Back to actual oversight questions from Democrats on the committee. Senator Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts repeated Hegseth's own words on multiple occasions when he denigrated the service of women in the military. And his sudden flip-flop or nomination conversion, as she described it, plus his refusal to pledge not to become a lobbyist after he serves as Secretary of Defense.
So if you're confirmed as Secretary of Defense, you will oversee our military, including about 250,000 women. And I have serious concerns that your behavior toward women disqualifies you from serving in this role. I'm not going to talk about anonymous sources. I'm just going to quote you directly. We've got the video. We've got it in print. So going back to January 2013, you told a Fox News interviewer that women in the military simply couldn't measure up to men in the military, saying that allowing women to serve in combat roles would force the military to lower the bar. You picked up on that same theme in 2015, making remarks on Fox News, referring to women in combat as, quote, it would erode standards. June 2024, you said on Ben Shapiro's podcast, quote, women shouldn't be in combat at all. 2024, you published a book, and you say on page 26 of your book, we need moms, but not in the military, especially in combat units. And then 10 weeks ago, you appeared on the Sean Ryan show and said, I'm straight up just saying we should not have women in combat roles. I want to be clear here. For 12 years, you were quite open about your views, and your views were consistently the same. Women are inferior soldiers, sailors, Marines, airmen, and guardians. And I notice on each of these quotes, those are said without qualification. It's not by how much you can lift or how fast you can run. They don't belong in combat, period, or your words, straight up. And then on November 9th, 2024, just 32 days after your last public comment saying that women absolutely should not be in combat, you declared that, quote, some of our greatest warriors are women, and you support having them serve in combat. Now, that is a very, very big about face in a very, very short period of time. What extraordinary event happened in that 32-day period that made you change the core values you had expressed for the preceding 12 years?
Senator, again, I very much appreciate you bringing up my comments from 2013, because for me, this issue has always been about standards. And unfortunately, because of some of the people that have been in political power for the last 4 years, priorities other than standards, lethality, and meritocracy have driven decision-making.
I'm quoting you from the podcast. Women shouldn't be in combat. What changed in the 32 days that the song you sang is not the song you come in here today to sing?
Senator, the concerns I have and the concerns that many have had, especially in ground combat units, is that in pursuit of certain percentages or quotas, standards have been changed.
What happened in that 32 days? You got a nomination from President Trump. Now, I've heard of deathbed conversions, but this is the first time I've heard of a nomination conversion. And I hope you understand that many women serving in the military right now might think that if you can convert so rapidly your long-held and aggressively pursued views in just 32 days, that 32 days after you get confirmed, maybe you'll just reverse those views and go back to the old guy who said, straight up, women do not belong in combat. Now, Mr. Hegstaff, you have written that after they retire, generals should be banned from working for the defense industry for 10 years. You and I agree on the corrosive effects of the revolving door between the Pentagon and defense contractors. Will you put your money where your mouth is and agree that when you leave this job, you will not work for the defense industry for 10 years?
Senator, it's not even a question I've thought about because
it's not one. Think about it right now.
It's not one. My motivation for this job
I understand
has never
that.
Been
I just
about
need
what
a
could
yes
conceivably
or no here.
Come next.
Time is short. I just need a yes or no.
I would consult with the president about what the policy
In
should be at the Defense Department.
In other words, you're quite sure that every general who serves should not go directly into the defense industry for 10 years, but you're not willing to make that same pledge?
I'm not a general, Senator.
You'll be the one, let us just be clear, in charge of the generals. So you're saying sauce for the goose, but certainly not sauce for the gander.
I would want to see what the policy of the president
is. Oh, I'll bet you would.
Senator Elizabeth Warren questioning Secretary of Defense nominee Pete Hegseth on Tuesday. Senator Gary Peters, Democrat of Michigan, drilled down on Hegseth's lack of qualifications to run the largest organization on the planet.
I've heard about the jobs you've had in the past. Let's just talk about qualifications.
Nothing remotely near the size of the Defense Department, right. I would acknowledge that.
Actually, Senator. Not remotely near even a medium-sized company in America, let alone a big company in America, especially a major corporation. And you're basically, we're hiring you to be the CEO of one of the most complex, largest organizations in the world. We're the board of directors here. I don't know of any corporate board of directors that would hire a CEO for a major company if they came and said, you know, I supervised 100 people before. You talk about standards. You talk about raising or lower. We have a problem of standards in the DOD, and we have to raise standards for the men and women who serve. Do you think that the way to raise the minimum standards of the people who serve us is to lower the standards for the Secretary of Defense, that we have someone who has never managed an organization more than 100 people is going to come in and manage this incredibly important organization and do it with a professionalism and has no experience that they can tell us that they have actually done that? I have real problems with that. This is not about other issues that are brought up. They're all very important. I'm just about trying to get things done, managing efficiently, and having the best people who have demonstrated that in a large organization. And I'm sorry, but I don't see that in your background. There are a lot of other things you can do very well. You're a capable person, but you have not convinced me that you're able to take on this tremendous responsibility with a complex organization and having little or no significant management experience.
Senator, I'm grateful to be hired by one of the most successful CEOs in American history.
Disabled combat veteran Senator Tammy Duckworth of Illinois, a Democrat who was critically wounded, losing both of her legs as a helicopter pilot in Iraq, challenged Hegseth's lack of qualifications and unpreparedness to serve as Secretary of Defense.
Mr. Hegseth, this hearing is about whether you are qualified to be Secretary of Defense. And let me just say that the American people need a SecDef who's ready to lead on day one. You are not that person. Our adversaries watch closely during times of transition, and any sense that the Department of Defense that keeps us safe is being steered by someone who's wholly unprepared for the job puts America at risk, and I am not willing to do that. You talk about DOD passing an audit. Please describe to me a time or an organization when you that you led underwent an audit. Have you led an audit of any organization, yes or no?
Senator, in both of the organizations I ran, we were always completely fiscally responsible.
Yes or no, did you lead an audit?
And the way my
leadership has been stated. Yes or no, did you lead an audit? Yes or no?
Completely mischaracterized.
What are you afraid of? You can't answer this question. Yes or no, did you lead an audit? Do you not know this answer?
Senator, of my leadership of these organizations has been misrepresented.
I will take that as a no. What were the findings? Though there were no findings because you've never led an audit. What guidance did you give the auditors? None, because you've never led an audit. A Secretary of Defense has to have breadth and depth of knowledge. Right now, I am concerned that you have neither. Mr. Hegseth, what is the highest level of international negotiations that you have engaged in, that you've led in? Because the Secretary of Defense does lead international security negotiations. And can you name some that the Secretary of Defense would lead? There's three main ones.
Do you know? I have not been involved in international security arrangements because I have not been in government. I've been a part of teaching about status of forces agreements.
But you don't remember to mention it? You're not qualified, Mr. Hegseth. You're not qualified. You talk about repairing our defense industrial complex. You're not qualified to that. We ask our troops to go into harm's way all the time. How can we ask these warriors to train and perform the absolute highest standards when you are asking us to lower the standards to make you the Secretary of Defense simply because you are buddies with our president-elect? And by the way, he has filed for bankruptcy 6 times. I'm not quite sure he's the kind of CEO you want to refer to as a successful businessman. You can't seem to grasp that there is no U.S. military as we know it without the incredible women that we serve. Women who've earned their place in their units. You have not earned your place as Secretary of Defense. You say you care about keeping our armed forces strong and that you like that our armed forces are meritocracy. Then let's not lower the standards for you. You, sir, are a no-go at this station.
Finally, Democratic Senator Mark Kelly of Arizona noted that Hegseth was not under oath during the hearings on Tuesday and returned to the many allegations of sexual assault against Donald Trump's nominee for Secretary of Defense.
So while leading concerned veterans of America, there were very specific cases cited by individuals about your conduct. I'm going to go through a few of them, and I just want you to tell me if these are true or false. Very simple. On Memorial Day 2014, at a CVA event in Virginia, you needed to be carried out of the event for being intoxicated.
Senator, anonymous smears.
Just true or false? Very simple. Summer of 2014 in Cleveland, drunk in public with the CVA team.
Anonymous smears.
I'm just asking for true or false questions. True or false answers. An event in North Carolina, drunk in front of 3 young female staff members after you had instituted a no alcohol policy and then reversed it. True or false?
Anonymous smears.
December of 2014 at the CVA Christmas party at the Grand Hyatt at Washington, D.C., you were noticeably intoxicated and had to be carried up to your room. Is that true or false?
Anonymous smears.
Another time, a CVA staffer stated that you passed out in the back of a party bus. Is that true or false?
Anonymous smears.
In 2014, while in Louisiana on official business for CVA, did you take your staff, including young female staff members, to a strip club?
Absolutely not. Anonymous smears.
If you had to answer these questions about sexual assault against you and your drinking and your personal conduct, would it have been different if you were under oath?
Senator, all I'm pointing out is the false claims against me.
Okay, I take it you do not want to answer that question. I walked into this hearing this morning concerned that you haven't demonstrated adequate leadership in your civilian roles. And this is a dangerous world we're living in here. And America cannot afford a Secretary of Defense who is unprepared for that mission. I'm going to leave with concerns about your transparency. You say you've had personal issues in your past, yet when asked about those very issues, you blame an anonymous smear campaign, even when many of these claims are not anonymous. Which is it? Have you overcome personal issues, or are you the target of a smear campaign? It can't be both. It's clear to me that you're not being honest with us or the American people, because you know the truth would disqualify you from getting the job.
As noted, there were no tough questions from any of the Republican members of the Senate Armed Services Committee on Tuesday during their hearing on the Secretary of Defense nominee for Donald Trump, Pete Hegseth. A vote for his nomination in the full Senate is scheduled currently for Inauguration Day on January 20. A quick update on the LA fires out here and our latest Green News report. That's next on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman.
What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At the broadcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. We'll get to the Green News Report momentarily, but getting caught up on the LA fires out here today, which, though firefighters made some headway over the weekend in the two largest fires in the county, there are now ominous warnings from the National Weather Service for the next 12 to 24 hours or so. The Palisades fire has now burned nearly 24,000 acres, hundreds of homes and businesses and landmarks in Pacific Palisades and westward along the Pacific Coast Highway toward Malibu. As of Tuesday morning, the fire was just 17% contained a week into it. That is, however, up from 14% early on Monday. Many parts of Pacific Palisades, including Malibu, Calabasas, Brentwood, and Encino, remain under evacuation orders or warnings, with 12,000 structures remaining at threat. Santa Monica, however, has downgraded its mandatory evacuation orders to warnings. Officials estimate that more than 5,300 structures, including many homes, have been damaged and or destroyed in that fire. Inland, the Eaton Fire near Pasadena and Altadena has burned more than 14,000 acres. As of Tuesday morning, that fire was just 35% contained, though that is up from, 33% early Monday. So, slow progress, but I guess moving in the right direction. Officials say 7,000 structures have been damaged in that fire. Most of Altadena was under an evacuation order, though I will note that on Monday, we drove across much of the county on the 210 freeway, including through Pasadena and Altadena. And in fact, there was no sign of fire at all where we were. We didn't even see smoke, which was surprising, even though the fire is said to still be raging. I mention that because I think that the national media is sort of giving the impression that Los Angeles is just burning down as a whole. It isn't. Some parts of it obviously are seeing horrendous destruction, but as the largest, most populous county in the nation, most of LA at this hour is just fine. If you didn't know that there were fires in large pockets of LA, you wouldn't know anything is amiss here at all driving around. That, of course, could change anywhere at any time out here. As AP notes this afternoon, millions of people across Southern California faced frightening new wildfire warnings on Tuesday. Santa Ana winds that began gusting over the mountains before sunrise on Tuesday were forecast to continue through the day, with enough force to carry fire-sparking embers for miles and stoke new outbreaks across a region where at least 24 people have already been killed. L.A. City Fire Chief Kristen Crowley told a morning news conference that, quote, life-threatening and destructive and widespread winds are already here. Much of Southern California remains under an elevated fire risk, with crews on high alert across a 300-mile stretch from San Diego to far north of L.A. Facing the greatest risks are inland areas north of L.A., including densely populated Thousand Oaks, North Ridge, and Simi Valley, home to more than 300,000 people. Tuesday's forecast included a once rare warning. The winds, combined with severely dry conditions thanks to worsening ravages of climate change, have resulted in yet another so-called particularly dangerous situation warning, or PDS, issued by the National Weather Service. It's the highest level of red flag warning, meaning that any new fire could explode in size. That's what we that was the warning we received last week before all of these fires were touched off. Gusts are forecast to pick up on Tuesday evening and into Wednesday before decreasing, and red flag warnings are now up from Central California to the Mexican border. Those will remain in effect through most of Wednesday. The so-called particularly dangerous situation warnings are expected once every 3 to 5 years. This is now the fourth one that we have had out here over the past 3 months. So, yes, we are not out of the worst of this yet. Most disturbing is that if winds reach 70 miles per hour or higher again, firefighting planes and helicopters become grounded, as we saw last week when the Palisades and Eaton fires initially broke out and quickly spread into massive fires, particularly with virtually no rain at all over the past 8 months. And with that, we've got a bit more on the fires and some other continuing dangers they pose in our latest Green News Report.
So smoke coming off of these tracks, hundreds and thousands of homes that have burned, is about the worst possible air you could be breathing.
Los Angeles fires intensify toxic air pollution and housing shortages in Southern California.
That mis and disinformation, I don't think, advantages or aids any of us.
Trump and Republicans set off a firestorm of disinformation about the fires. Plus,
I expect that there will be strings attached to money that is ultimately approved.
Congressional Republicans threaten to withhold disaster aid.
All of those disaster politics and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Does the scale of devastation in Los Angeles indicate that we as a country are just simply not prepared for the realities of the climate crisis?
No, it indicates everything is just fine. Thoughts and prayers, drill, baby, drill. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, nothing to worry about. Everything out here is fine, except it isn't, and the fires continue. But you have been looking at some of the broader pictures of what we're going to be dealing with now out here in Los Angeles.
Yes, as we go to air, the entire Los Angeles region remains gripped in an unprecedented multi-day siege of simultaneous wildfires fueled by hurricane-force Santa Ana winds and an extreme drought. As the battle enters its second week, the nation is less than a week away from the inauguration of Donald Trump. Investigations are underway into the cause of each fire and the emergency response, including water pressure issues. Smoke pollution is a critical concern. Experts say that as man-made climate change increases the frequency and intensity of extreme wildfires, toxic smoke is also a growing factor. A retired L.A. County fire official on local news explains why.
So smoke coming off of these tracks, hundreds and thousands of homes that have burned, is about the worst possible air you could be breathing. Because all those plastics, all those synthetics, all those petroleum byproducts that are used now in modern construction have burned. And it's highly toxic and it's carcinogenic.
By some estimates, wildfire smoke now triggers nearly 700,000 premature deaths every year worldwide. Officials also warn that when and if delayed seasonal monsoon rains arrive,
if
they will bring new dangers of mudslides and debris flows in burn areas.
Great.
The Biden administration is surging federal aid to the region, but the wildfires have deepened the existing housing shortage in the state and has already led to spiked rents despite disaster price gouging laws. Tens of thousands will need temporary or permanent housing. There are also massive job losses at businesses that no longer exist.
Because they have been burnt down?
Yes. The corporate media has fixated on celebrities who lost homes, but the far larger pool of victims in devastated working class and minority communities increasingly fear that the fires will leave even deeper economic inequality in their wake. The fires are already projected to be one of the costliest disasters in U.S. history. Preliminary estimates put damage and economic losses so far at as much as $150 billion.
And imagine had we spent $150 billion in Los Angeles alone to prevent this disaster, as climate scientists have been warning us for so many years.
Officials are very concerned about a broadening insurance crisis, as insurance carriers have already pulled out of some markets in California, Texas, and Florida. Here's FEMA Administrator Deanne Criswell on CNN Sunday.
These types of catastrophic risks, these fire risks, they are increasing. You know, we're seeing the change coming from climate change, and we're seeing more significant severe weather events. That's what we're seeing here in California. Without insurance, people are not going to have the tools and the resources to help rebuild their lives.
California's insurance commissioner issued a one-year moratorium prohibiting insurance companies from canceling policies or refusing to renew in areas devastated by the wildfires. Disinformation is also spreading like, well, wildfire. Mm. Climate scientists have the receipts showing that climate change is the accelerant for the L.A. fire emergency. But with just days to go before his second inauguration as president, Donald Trump is politicizing the tragedy, lying about the fires and the emergency response to smear his political rivals and distract attention away from climate change.
So, what he always does.
Republican politicians and right-wing media are amplifying the baseless claims, just as they did over the federal response to catastrophic Hurricane Helene in North Carolina. Several congressional Republicans have already threatened to withhold aid from the state. California Governor Gavin Newsom has launched a website to debunk the flood of Republican disinformation at gavinnewsom.com. Even after this round of fires is out, there will be broad and long-term impacts for the city, the state, and the nation.
And the disinformation will continue, I suspect, for years. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
California.
Thank you very much, Desi Doyen. And by the way, thanks for plowing through all of that audio to get it for us from today's Pete Hegseth hearing.
Yes, and please, folks, share information responsibly. Do not share disinformation.
Good advice. By the way, on Wednesday, there will be 7 hearings for Donald Trump nominees all at the same time. Good luck on that, Desi Doyen. Thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show or any other, you can download them all for free at brandblog.com, though it is greatly appreciated when you stop on by if you could hit one of those donate buttons to help us stay on your public airwaves, or you can go straight to brandblog.com/donate to do exactly that. Drop me email if you like. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the social medias, yes, especially Blue Sky, you will find me at The Brad Blog. We will see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world. You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener-supported thanks to listeners like you who stop by bradblog.com/donate.